Hello, I'm Helen Brown, and this is Bush Telegraph on Radio National. It's a program where we aim to connect the country, and to get the debate going, we'll be looking at what people think about rural and regional areas, and also how different that is to what's really happening. That's coming up later.
What you're hearing there are the very first words spoken on April 23, 2001. It was a brand new program exploring regional and rural affairs, and it went to air every day between 11 and midday on what was then called Radio National. Hi, I'm Cameron Wilson, and today Bush Telegraph bids you farewell. It's our very last program, so we're going to go back in time and celebrate today. We're going to look at the highlights over the last 13 years of the program. I've been saying the last 15 years for the last month. I'll get it right on our final day. You're going to hear from the former presenters very soon, most of the former presenters who are going to share their memories, but we're going to start with someone who was critical, integral to the beginning of the program. Margot Foster was the founding executive producer of Bush Telegraph. Margot also gave me a job, and she was instrumental in shaping the kind of program that Bush Telly became. We said goodbye to Margot a couple of years ago. She retired in 2012, but we dragged her out of the back blocks of Tasmania for one more time. Hi, Margot.
Hey, that really made me smile, hearing the old theme tune. How I love it.
Yeah, you were disappointed, weren't you, when the theme changed?
Oh, I wept. It was terrible. I mean, I love that fly, I love that whip, I love the excitement. It never failed to make me sit up and smile.
Yeah, but then, you know, the new one has its appeal.
Yeah.
Okay, what were the aims of the program, Margot, when it started?
Oh, look, as Helen said, it was to bridge that divide between country and city. And, I mean, even over the last decade, that divide has widened even further because fewer and fewer people have that direct link with the country. We wanted to do something that went, you know, was to be more than a news program. The who, what, where, why, when of news programs was one thing, but we wanted to do more extended, more highly researched and a more complex exploration, I guess, of issues. I mean, around food and fibre, which was, it's not all straightforward. Mm. I mean, think of big issues like the adoption of GM food or animal welfare issues, and live exports are still really contentious. But we wanted to actually look at those issues from the point of view of people who were dealing with them on the front line and to get a deeper understanding of them. And the one thing we really wanted to do, I think the biggest thing that drove me, was not to draw our stories out of existing news, but to actually locate stories from the regions, identify the stories that were of concern, and do it that way.
Mm, okay, stay with us, Margot. We've just dragged in Helen Brown, who very first presenter, journalist now, former Jakarta-based correspondent as well with the ABC. Helen, you're about to head out on a news story, so we've got to get you in quick. How are you?
That's right. Sorry, I'm well. Thank you. How are you? Hello, Margot.
Hi, Helen.
How lovely to talk to you.
How lovely to hear you introduce the show like that.
Yeah, the very first and the very last, Helen. Yes. What do you remember most from those early days?
Oh, look, gosh, you know, and it was a while ago now and so much has happened, but it was a really exciting project when we started it. And I think what was so fabulous about the team in that first year was a genuine desire to really bring different parts of the country to listeners and give them a different reference point about what is happening beyond the cities of Australia. Mm. We worked really hard to bring different viewpoints to air, to look at different subjects and really push people's brains a little bit about what was actually going on.
From your point of view, how different has it been to tell those type of stories, the stories of regional Australia, to a city audience when you compare the work you've done in Southeast Asia or what you do now in the newsroom?
Yeah, well, it was sort of a natural progression for me, having started out as a rural reporter and talking to a regional audience. When I came to Melbourne to work, that's when I had to learn about how to frame a story so that it interested city people. It's a bit of marketing in a way, really, isn't it?
Margot, that's always been the challenge, hasn't it? How do you convince someone who might live in, let's say, Abbotsford in Melbourne to care about what's happening in the bush?
Look, I think the brief was absolutely magnificent because stunningly, those stories do resonate because we all eat food, we all wear clothing, we all care about the environment. We do have in our hearts some kind of connection with this wide brown land. And the fact is, it is so diverse and different. People love to hear the stories, even the stories that are way, way away from where they live. And life in Tasmania is so utterly the opposite of life in the Kimberley. And everybody loves stories, and for us it was hearing those stories and bringing those voices into people's lives. And without exception, I think I can't think of a time where we were really pilloried for, you know, bringing all this sort of hokey stuff from the country to the airwaves. I never heard that. People just seem to be celebrating the kind of information and the storytelling that we were able to deliver.
Now, Indigenous affairs and Indigenous issues have been a constant throughout Bush Telegraph. Helen, just before we let you go, I want to take you back to an interview you did back in 2001. Have a listen.
It's 13 to 12, and I'd like to go now back to Libby Carney, who helped runs the Aboriginal Women's Outreach Project. She joins us from our Darwin studio. And Libby, we talked there about simply giving people the knowledge to help themselves. Is that what you're finding in the communities you're dealing with?
Yes. When we go out to the communities, we are always advised by our community legal workers who are based there on how to address each situation.
Wondering, how important is that legal support that you're taking out to rural communities? What happened before? Did the women simply not have legal counsel?
Yes, that's right. We've only been going to communities since late 99.
So they were going to court.
Early 99, sorry.
Right, they were going to court without legal counsel.
That's right. Although the Aboriginal Legal Services did go to the communities for court circuits, a lot of the times they've already represented the male partner, so she doesn't get to have any legal assistance from a solicitor. So she has to rely on the police and the police prosecutors as well. And they often do not know what the story is. They often don't treat it as culturally appropriately as they should.
So that's an interview with Libby Carney from the Aboriginal Women's Outreach Project back in 2001. So we're talking 13 years ago. Helen, do you remember the kinds of responses that came from those stories at the time?
I remember that program that we did very well. It's definitely a standout because I think even though we'd done the research, we still had these answers coming back to us, which were leaving us stunned. You know, was this really happening? And the women who went on that program were so honest about a problem and something that had been a little bit taboo as well. And, you know, that really came down to the skill of the producers I was working with at the time, Margot Foster and Belinda Tromp, to draw these people out to tell their stories. And it was such a privilege to talk to them. And, you know, it still resonates with me, the raw honesty with which these women spoke to us.
Yeah, yeah. Belle's been a star throughout, hasn't she?
Belle Tromp.
Yeah. Oh, we were just in One Arm Point in the Kimberley, what, 2-3 weeks ago, and that just to get an insight into how different Indigenous life in Australia can be to what many of us are used to in the cities. It's been one of the privilege for in this position to tell that story, but it's also important for people to
Very
see
important.
It, to hear about it.
It's still largely unexplored, and, you know, I have a rural background. My family is still farming, and that's why I love talking about what's happening in the regions. But even as someone who's grown up in rural Australia, there's, you know, not many conversations are still had about the Indigenous culture, what happened before the white settlers arrived. You know, it's still it's quite unexplored, and that's a bit of a shame, I think.
Mm, yeah. Well, our program dedicated to Indigenous culture, I think, is still podcastable for a little while longer at least. Helen, I know you've got a job to do. So,
I do. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been lovely, and what a lovely little trip down memory lane.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Wish you all the best.
Okay, that's Helen Brown. So the very first voice you heard when Bush Telegraph started. This is the final Bush Telegraph today on RN. Cameron Wilson with you. I've still got Margot Foster with me, the founding executive producer of Bush Telegraph. We'll be meeting a few of the other past presenters and talking about their highlights very soon. But Margot, I want to see if you remember this voice.
This weekend, we'll be crutching the sheep. We do this once a year. It's a bit like a haircut. Skilled shearers cut off the daggy wool around the backsides of the sheep, their bellies, and around their eyes. It helps them see better. Getting organised for this mini shearing brings to mind the price of wool and trade. In 2003, Australia exported over $3 billion worth of wool. Sheep's wool is big business. And it's trade I wanted to talk about today.
That's yes. Country Viewpoint, Margot.
Kathy McGowan. Yes, how about that? Now,
Whatever
Kathy
became
McGowan,
of her.
Well, she was even on the airwaves on Radio National before Bush Telegraph as part of Country Breakfast. And Belinda was one of the people who was instrumental in pulling together a small stable of regular viewpointers. Mm. It was a concept that I just adored, because it was people telling stories about where they were. And people used to, we widened it to have a daily country viewpoint, which was incredibly hard work.
Yeah, I bet.
But we just had this wealth of fantastic storytelling going on at the end of the program. It was an incredibly treasured little component.
Yeah, but it was a lot of work. So why were you so committed to it? Why did you think it was worth the time and the effort to get it out?
Look, I have to say it was a key part of the interactive component. Bush Telegraph has a proud history of a relationship with its audience, and we'll talk about that presumably a little bit later. Mm. But I think the country viewpoints really brought home to me how valuable it was to have people who felt that they had somewhere to tell their stories. You didn't have to be famous, you didn't have to be of note in any way, but you did have an experience which was fascinating and interesting. And Kathy, just offering that little way in to the reality of raising sheep was just an example of that. And it was all sorts of things. It might be a snake in the roof. It wasn't just on farm. It was life in a country town as much as that. It was the tree changes and sea changes. It was everybody could have a say.
Mm. So you bring up audience interaction then. Now, Bush Telegraph was around before Facebook and Twitter and all this social media that made it a lot easier, I guess, to interact with the audience. And saying that, there's a few tweets coming in now. I'll try to go through them in a moment. But we've also had a lot of projects over the years that have involved the audience making decisions. We had Wilbur the Pig in, I think that was last year, wasn't it? Michael McKenzie invited you to bottle your own wine. Michael will be along very soon to tell us more about that. And years before that, you had Grow Your Own, a segment that introduced cotton grower Stu Higgins to the world. We had him just back on recently. Sarah McDonald was the brains behind that. Sarah, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
How important was that audience engagement to you?
Oh, it was really important. I really was keen to provide a bit of a bridge, I suppose, between city and country Australia, and to make people understand who live in the city just some of the intricacies of farming and the challenges that farmers face. And Stu, I thought when I met him, he just really struck me as this really dynamic, interesting guy who just had this passion for making the land, you know, a career out of the land. And he was very, very thoughtful about everything he did. And he said, "You just don't understand what I do. You don't understand what I think about. You don't understand all the myriad of issues I'm facing." Mm. So I was like, "Well, help us understand. Let us go through that process with you." And that's where it came about.
Mm. Okay, how hard was it as an idea to get up and running? Because that was fairly radical stuff, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't easy, but in some ways it was, you know, when a lot of online was starting to be involved, so we wanted to bring that side of communication with the audience into the radio. So what we did was we set it up, we divided his year up about, you know, to the various stages in terms of deciding what to plant and when to irrigate and the like and whether to use pesticides. And we divided into stages, and Stu would come on and he'd talk about what he was thinking about and why he would go one way and why he was thinking another way, and we'd go through the issues. And then we'd get the audience to vote about what they wanted to do. So Stu donated a paddock. So, you know, with the Grow Your Own audience for Bush Telegraph had their own paddock, and he had the paddock next to it, and he said, "This is what I'm doing on mine. What would you like to do?" And it meant that people had to engage and think far more deeply about what farmers were going through. And then they had then we took the votes, which we did online, and then we'd discuss the results as they came through over the year.
Mm, this is the idea of putting people in the shoes of the farmer or the producer. I think that's been one of the strengths of the program, to make people think about it in a different way, and I guess that was an example there.
Yes, sure. Yeah. I learned a lot along the way, I've got to say, as well.
I've been the same. All of a sudden you go, "Oh, it's not as easy as it looks." Yeah. Stu himself had another airing on Bush Telegraph when he was invited back in September 2003 to co-anchor the Bush Telegraph Water Challenge. So here's the producer and presenter, Alicia Brown, introducing the segment. Thank you.
That is the sprinkle of fanfare to herald in our brand new segment here on Bush Telegraph today. Now, we have asked you to grow cotton before here on this program, and granted, you rose to the challenge, but I hope you haven't gotten too relaxed or gone soft, because it doesn't stop there. I've got a brand new Bush Telegraph challenge for you today. We're going to ask you to be brave enough to face exactly how much water you use every day at your place. Now, that's whether you live 600 k's from Perth or in inner city Brisbane or regional New South Wales, on a farm, in a unit, under the stars, I don't care, it doesn't matter. I want you to be part of this challenge. It's called the Bush Telegraph Water Challenge. And to take part, you have to measure how much water you use and also be prepared to weigh up the water issues we're facing here in Australia. I've got some good news too. The person who is challenging us to do all this is the same one who challenged us to face our responsibility in the production chain. Stu Higgins, irrigated cotton farmer from Queensland. G'day and welcome back to Bush Telly.
Yeah, good morning, Alicia. It's fun to be here.
I should have known you'd be back asking us to take responsibility for our part in Australia's water management.
Well, we're all gluttons for punishment, so we'll see how we go.
Absolutely. Explain the water challenge for us.
Well, we'll start with the talking component for the challenge, what we're going to be getting our teeth into every Wednesday. Well, obviously looking at water, but looking at water right across Australia and through a whole facet of conditions. We're going to look at water in the environment. We're going to be looking at water in industry and agriculture. We're going to look at domestic water use. We're going to be looking at the economics, dollars and cents surrounding water. And pardon the pun, if that gets a little bit too dry, we're going to look at the culture of water, how different people in Australia look at water.
That's Stu Higgins speaking on Bush Telegraph with presenter Alicia Brown back in 2003. So, Sarah, this was in the midst of the Millennium Drought, and there was a lot of publicity about the Murray-Darling Basin at the time. How did you see attitudes changing towards water?
Well, I think when people have to think about it themselves, you know, especially people that live in the city, we turn on tap and there it is. We don't think about the resource across the country, the different amounts that people have and the ease with which they can access and the challenges that people on the land have to weigh up how much water they're going to use. And that was a big factor in Grow Your Own as well. Stu had to decide when to water, when was the right time, how much to use, and we talked about dam levels and the like. And it was also at a time where there was a great debate about cotton farming in Australia and the amount of water that they use.
How
and
evil
Cubby
is
Station,
it? Yeah.
and Cubby Station and the like, and how much, how many swimming pools of water it was using per day to irrigate cotton. So it was a really interesting time where all of these issues were all coming to the fore, but it just meant that people could think about it a bit differently, because sometimes when you're in the city you have the privilege of not thinking about the water you use.
So Sarah, with these projects, how much audience interaction did you actually see? Did people really get behind it and support it?
Yes, they did, and it was really early on online days for the ABC. I think the ABC had only just hired its first people to do online work, to set up websites and design websites and work out how they'd use, and we had a few problems with that. I think they crashed at one stage, where we could do graphs and interactive modelling as well and have the the way that people could vote. So, there was so many things happening at the one stage that it could encourage that, but we also had many calls about it. I remember going on another radio national show, Australia Talks Back, to discuss it. And it got quite a bit of attention, I think, because people were really interested in that new sphere and that new way of bringing people together in different forms of media at the same time.
So, Margot, that level of audience interaction, how did that shape how the program evolved over the years?
Look, I think there's a very deep sense of ownership from the audience with our program, not just because of the actual interactivity online through Viewpoints, but also going out into the regions as well. And I think giving people the opportunity to have their voices aired and heard is really, really at the heart of how we were able to meet the charter, which was always a core intention of the program. And I think the online stuff just took off. I think the absolutely inspired Grow Your Own project was just a stunning success. I remember the BBC ringing up to talk to me about the concept and the project. We were courageous early adopters. We had the hardest working team you could imagine. The work that Sarah and Alicia did with a system which was wobbly. Remember dear old Wallace? How it was sort of
yes.
It was
unfortunately.
And we did. I mean, I think we were early adopters on Bush Telly, and we were really committed to the idea of hearing what people had to say and understanding the complexities of life outside the city.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, it was really exciting stuff and good work, and thanks for coming on today and taking time out. I know you've been on radio in Sydney, so I appreciate
you
coming.
Yes, I have. Busy week. Yeah. But I loved my time on Bush Telly and going out to Stew's Farm and to other areas like parks and having morning tea with people and the like and covering their stories and visiting their workplaces.
The abattoir,
and farms.
Sarah.
And the abattoir. Oh. Yes, you know what? My child who was kicking me that day, I was pregnant at the time, she keeps trying to go vegetarian, but we're not letting it happen yet.
Sarah, you keep her out of the abattoir.
I think I scarred her.
Maybe a discussion for another day, Sarah, but your work as an author has had a much bigger say in my relationship, my marriage, than you might realise, but maybe we'll discuss that over a drink one day.
Yes, we'll do that personally.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks,
all the best. Bye.
Sarah McDonald, early presenter of Bush Telegraph. It is our final programme today, RN and Radio Australia. I'm Cameron Wilson, and we're saying goodbye to Bush Telegraph. I hope it's a celebration. We're looking at the good things, the enjoyable things that people remember over the last 13 years that the program has been on air. The founding executive producer, Margot Foster, is still with me. Margot, a big part of this program has been outside broadcasts, where we head off into the back blocks and try to tell the stories that would be a lot harder to get to if you didn't go out there and find them for yourselves. What are some of the standout memories of your time on the road?
Oh, wow. Look, I adored going on outside broadcasts. I have to say, one of the best ones I enjoyed was going from Karratha to Broome through three homesteads and working with our West Australian colleagues. And it was just such a tiny little outfit. We were on the road for a week. We had to travel vast distances to get to places. It was, big, long 5-hour drives between here and there. And we were broadcasting from under trees, on back steps, on verandas. And we were collecting little bits of exciting bits of colour, going out on the little vehicles they used to round up the cattle and talking to the cook. And it was just fantastic. And somehow we were able to put out an hour of live radio, which just took our audience directly to these places. I just loved them. And I remember Michael broadcasting from the Pearl Lugger at the end of that trip. It was just hilarious. We even incorporated live music. We were pushing boundaries that was never done, particularly on Radio National, which was always very highly produced and controlled. So we were a little bit out there, I think, in what we did. But, Cameron, I do think that our trip to New Zealand was on par with that and Lake Eyre for wobbliness and,
wobbliness.
This may or may not work.
All I remember is looking at the map of New Zealand and these roads that didn't look very long, and you got there and they went forever. And
that... That last broadcast that we did from Waiheke Island, where we couldn't broadcast. We actually had to record it and then send it in bits to be put together just before being broadcast actually from Melbourne. So that was pretty wild.
My memory of that's a little hazy because you teed up those blokes with beer and whiskey to turn up at about 9 a.m. in the morning. So you probably
remember
that better
than me. That's right. We recorded early. We did it as live. And then we had to cut it up into pieces and send it back. And they were just at the other in Melbourne hoping that all the bits arrived on time to be put to air at 11.
So one of the standout, I think, outside broadcast was right on the edge of Lake Eyre. This was when Michael McKenzie was presenting. Let's hear a little bit of that program.
Good morning and welcome to Bush Telegraph live from the shores of Lake Eyre South. We're at Halligan Bay, one of the prime viewing areas for this vast expanse of water that has flowed in from the north, carrying with it an enormous amount of life. We're going to be talking about things like fauna recovery today, the bird life, what you can see from the air, all via satellite. This is technology at the very cutting edge and very boundaries of what we can do in the ABC. So if you hear me drop out occasionally, just bear with us, because I think you'll find this is well worth the effort as we explore this vast area in the inland of Australia.
So there's Michael apologising in advance in case things go wrong. That was a tough one, wasn't it, Margot?
That was extremely tough. I remember we were working with our South Australian colleagues at that time, and we'd gotten to this place and did the test with the satellite, which was not a success originally. So it took a huge amount of working to try to work out how to make this satellite system work. And it was, sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. So there was no sense. We had no confidence, actually, at all. So there we were early in the morning. There was nobody there. There were a few people that drove all the way out from William Creek to be there under the at the picnic table on the edge of the lake. And amazingly, it broadcast and it went to air, which was fantastic. But sadly for our country, our colleagues, it didn't work so well. So we were blessed with a lot of luck in our travels, I can tell you. And I can remember dropouts happening at the exact moment that we were actually playing in little pre-recorded packages, such as A Country Viewpoint. I remember the producer saying, "Oh, we lost you, but luckily we had Viewpoint on," or something like that.
So
we were blessed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Margot, you've been, as I said earlier, an integral part of the program over the 13 years. Thanks for coming out of retirement for one more day. Appreciate it.
I loved it.
Yeah, thanks, Margot. Margot Foster, who I owe. For giving me a shot at presenting Bush Telegraph. Well, Margot did mention there the importance of the rural teams, the ABC rural team around the country. We've got reporters all over the all over Australia, and look, they've always been a huge help to getting this program to air and telling you some of those stories, those really colourful stories of interesting characters out in the paddock or wherever they might be, right around Australia. Matt Brann now presents the Northern Territory Country Hour, but spent a lot of time in Kununurra, in the Kimberley, and has always been more than helpful to this program. Matt, I get the feeling you may not be totally sad that we're going, because it means we won't keep getting you out of bed and harassing you.
Mate, no, I am sad that you're going. My first contact with Bush Telegraph, I had the satellite phone in hand. I was standing on top of the vehicle in the middle of the Gibb River Road near Imagie, trying to get a little bit of signal so I could have a chat to you guys. A vehicle comes up behind me. He yells out the window, "You all right, mate?" And I just said, "All's good. Just trying to have a chat to Bush Telegraph." And I just remember him. He had a big smile on his face, put the thumb up and said, "Good on ya. Awesome program." And from that day, I was like, right, I've got to try and get on Bush Telegraph as much as I can.
Oh, really? Oh, so we haven't been annoying you?
No.
You've been a bit grumpy on the phone sometimes.
I do remember that one time I'd been flying out of Southeast Asia and was about to go to bed and got a call from you guys. I was delirious. God knows what I said on the radio that day, but no, it's always been good fun.
Because you've been almost out, not just you, the Territory team's almost been our fallback. It's like, oh, we haven't got a story today. What are they doing in the Territory? So,
and it's been great, mate, because often, you know, you meet people in the north and there's a frustration that people down south just don't quite get what's happening up there. They don't quite understand the issues and they don't celebrate in the good times of the north as well. So to have the characters of the north and the stories of the north being broadcast on a program like Bush Telegraph and being able to share that with people in the city has been fantastic. Yeah. So, no, Bush Telegraph's been such an important program and it's been awesome to be a part of it, buddy.
But what's it actually like to, you live somewhere like Kununurra, your job's to, you know, find whatever it is, 2-3 stories a day. What's day-to-day life like in that job?
Well, certainly when you start, it is big hours and a little bit stressful. You, as a young reporter, you find yourself sent off to places like Kununurra and Karratha and all those, and you perhaps have never been there before in your life and you've never seen a crop of sugar cane, or you're used to Herefords and there's a big floppy Brahmin in front of you. And so it's hard work and you spend a lot of hours driving and meeting people, but that hard work starts to fade and becomes fantastic fun and becomes, you know, it becomes a joy, not a job. And then you get to do more by working with Bush Telegraph and people like that. So,
At least you knew what a Hereford was. I remember getting the job and ringing my grandfather, who's a farmer, and saying, what's a joined heifer?
Don't get me wrong. Mum and Dad are still on the farm, so there's a few SOS calls to them at times, just to double check.
Yeah. Well, look, Matt, it's been great to have your contribution and the entire Territory team, actually all of ABC Rural's contribution. It's often been the thing that people comment on the most, to say, look, I loved that character, whether it was a Catty Brain story from the centre or whatever it might be. There's too many reporters to mention.
There's some beaut people living out there in rural and remote Australia, and for them to have a platform to spin a yarn or two is just tremendous.
Yeah. All right. All the best, Matt, and thank you for letting us annoy you one last time. I know you've got a program to do soon, don't you?
I better duck off. No, but thanks so much, Bush Telegraph. Great work and keeping it classy to the end. Good on you.
Thanks, Matt. Matt Brown, one of the many reporters that we have called on time and time again. And really, it's for me, they're the team that have made the program quite different to anything else that you're likely to hear. The fact that you've got these guys on the ground to tell those stories. You're listening to the last ever Bush Telegraph. I'm Cameron Wilson, you're on RN and Radio Australia. Now I'm going to introduce the two men that they made my life hell in the early days, because all I got was letters saying, bring back the Michaels. I want Michael Cathcart and Michael McKenzie. Michael McKenzie, of course, was the presenter of Bush Telegraph for 7 years, from 2004 to 2011. And Michael Cathcart was, it was a double act for 3 years, wasn't it, Michael?
2009 I came in. So Michael sort of went part-time and I filled in when he just didn't feel like coming.
And it worn him down.
And anyway, no one noticed. I mean, they all thought we were one and the same person anyway.
I know. And I'd get praise for McKenzie's good work, and he'd get flack for the things I'd said that people didn't like.
Can I tell you, the best praise I ever got was this letter telling me that they just heard the best interview I'd ever done, and it was a Greg Muller interview. So Greg had done this fantastic interview, and it was
And that's why Greg's got a career.
Exactly. Michael McKenzie, you'd worked all over the place before.
So I'd come down from Darwin. And got a job as a comedy producer, which was actually the saddest job I've ever had in the ABC. I cried more as a comedy producer than any other job. So when Bush Telly came along, I jumped at it.
Are you serious? I don't know if you're winding me up there.
No, serious.
Yeah?
Yeah. I was commissioned to make radio comedy, and when that didn't work, they gave me Bush Telly.
All right, we'll put you on Bush Telly instead. Yeah. How different was it for you, though, to go to this program that was aimed at both a rural and a regional and a city audience all in one here?
Well, I kicked off my life in the ABC in Lismore, and then went to Orange and then to Darwin. So the connections to regional were pretty strong for me. And I guess from my point of view, when I got interviewed for the job and they said, what do you think about the city-country divide? I actually was quite short-tempered. I'm surprised I actually got the gig, because I said, oh, I'm so over it. You know, it's what I'm interested in is talking to people about their lives. And if you do that well, other people will also find that story interesting, no matter where they're from.
Mm. Michael Cathcart, your background was quite different, wasn't it? We've had one or two conversations about how much experience or you knew about.
Oh, yeah, totally. So my start in the ABC was in 2000, presenting an art show on at the same time as Books and Arts is now on.
Mm.
And then I went to television and did some other things. And really, I've also had this other life as an academic. I've been teaching Australian history at Melbourne University for a long time.
Celebrity academic.
A little bit. Yeah. And writing A History of Water, which I've been working on for ages. So when the call came to come back and work on Bush Telly, it was exciting, not because I had a country background, but because I'd been researching
water
and farming and irrigation, and also ideas of 19th century settlement, the way we thought about the bush. So it was, and the show itself had mattered to me so much. You know, it's such a thrill, and you must feel this too. You come in and you host a show that you've listened to and had your life enriched by, and one day you're the guy saying, hello and welcome to the program, it's great to be here, and it really is.
Yes.
And we all did the mime with the whip. I mean, I loved the whip at the start of the show.
I never, until this week, I had never presented this program with the whip.
What do you mean?
Well, because when I arrived, the theme got changed.
I had a new theme.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realise that.
Yeah.
They took the theme away.
Were you whipless?
Yeah, they standardised all the themes and said to Bush Telly he couldn't have the theme anymore.
I didn't realise that.
Yeah, I had to wait until the final week.
There it is.
Oh, look, and it's funny because Margot mentioned earlier some of her favourite memories of outside broadcasts and reaching into lives in the way that Michael has done and you've done and I've done, literally on back verandas of cattle stations. One of the ones that Margot mentioned was going up through the Pilbara, ending in Broome. And we did this amazing broadcast, I remember, off the back veranda of Anna Plain Station, 1 million acres. You could see the curvature of the earth out there. It was incredible. And we literally sat looking out over this landscape, this bare landscape, and I sat talking to a Bostonian biologist who happened to be having dinner at the place the night before, who was investigating the sex life of bush tomatoes and had a punk band. So we played his music and talked about gonads in tomatoes with an American mm-hmm. on the back veranda. I love that.
It particularly has to do with the reproductive biology of these bush tomatoes, and many of them share a rare form of sexual system in which they have separated male and female individual plants, like a holly bush would or a date palm. And this is a rare condition in plants in general, but for some reason, many of the bush tomatoes of the Kimberley area have this same condition of separate sexes.
Why are we only seeing this now as an area of exploration and research? I mean, surely the bush tomato has been known in various forms for a number of years. How come it's been able to shroud itself in mystery for so long?
We've known a lot about bush tomatoes in general. This particular question about their sexual systems is something that was only sort of begun work on in the 1970s and has become, for me now, sort of a focus of my research. But I think what you'll find when you speak to Bill as well is that there's lots of things to be discovered here still. And that's what has amazed me, is we could park the car and step out, and there's a new species right on the side of the road. And this is not the way it is where I'm from. You know? It's very different.
So that's PhD student Chris Martin talking to Michael McKenzie on the veranda of Anna Plains in the northwest of WA. And what was going on that day with the technology, Michael? Is that you sounded a very long way away.
Oh, man, that was cutting edge when we were there, because that was literally down a fax line that Anna Plains had as a connection to the outside world. So you're hearing it as a pretty scratchy phone line. And, of course, as we progressed and Cathcart came on board, suddenly the technology rocketed when we had an academic on board.
Yeah,
things got way better.
It was amazing. I mean, you could broadcast from a picnic table, you know, in the middle of the bush at Tennant Creek or somewhere like that, with a little unit that's the size of, I don't know, it's like a little suitcase, isn't it? What are they called? Nick's G units or something. Mm. Anyway, they broadcast. They go to the satellite. I never knew what was going on, but Greg Mullen knew how to work.
Yeah. You do it just with your phone now, too. That's the most incredible thing.
That's the next big thing.
Yeah. Reproductive systems. It's a story that just kept coming up.
Sex played a huge role in the life of Bush Telegraph. It's just that you never want to talk about it in normal circles. That's all.
Yeah. But I remember one of the... You know, you have these questions you instantly wish you hadn't asked it. And we had a...
My whole career has been based on that.
We had a bloke who was trying to breed crocodiles on, and he was talking about artificial insemination. I said, how do you extract a semen from a crocodile?
Oh, did you?
Stick your finger up its anus was the answer. And you're like, oh.
And over to you, Michael.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think the worst question I've ever asked was, we were doing a question that comes up a lot on Bush Telly, which is about men's health. Mm. You know, men neglect their health in the bush. And so we get a guy who comes on and he says, now, it's important for men to do pelvic floor exercises. And I think, okay, I'm up for this. I will ask him to take me through the routine, and the whole of Australia can join in. Now, Cam and Michael, I'd like you to do this with me and experience what I experienced that day on air, right? So I'm the guest. You say to me, ask me the question.
So what's...
Take me through the pelvic floor exercise. That's what you're going to say.
Yeah, don't ask him about crocodiles.
All right. And then I say to you, okay, Cam, just imagine...
Take me through the pelvic floor exercise.
Okay, now just imagine, Cam, that you're sitting there on the seat and just try and suck the seat up through your anus. Can you feel that tight in your anus? And can you feel your testicles lifting in your scrotum?
Yes. I'm now standing up with the seat attached.
So this guy does this, you know, and I think, oh, no, I've just evoked this image of myself in the most intimate way. You know, I'm trying to be taken seriously as a serious commentator on Australian affairs. But my knackers are now national property.
And that's what happened when we had the whip and the theme. You see, that's the kind of conversations that ensued.
Reckless.
Yeah.
Now, we heard earlier from Sarah McDonald about the audience interaction.
Yeah.
Now, Michael McKenzie, you had With the Grain, with John Ferrier. And somehow that involved singing and music around the family piano.
Well, look, we had to do something, because in the end all you could do was sing. The whole interactive nature of the project was that, again, like Grow Your Own, we had our own wheat field where the audience was making big decisions on fertilisation, do we go organic, therefore no pesticides, etc., etc. And in the end, it didn't matter, because the drought was so comprehensive, both John's crop and our crop failed, utterly failed. So we went to Birchip for 2 days. Birchip is in the Mallee of northeast Victoria. And we spent 2 days in the community. And in one of those days, we went to the Ferrier homestead and we sat in and talked about what these kind of failures in crop mean to a family. And in the end, we all gathered around the piano, and John's cousin Glennis tickled the ivories.
Give me a home among the gum trees, with lots of plum trees. A sheep, a tour, a kangaroo, and clothes right out the back, veranda out the front, and an old rocking chair. Give me a home among the gum trees, with lots of plum trees. A sheep, a tour, a kangaroo, and clothes right out the back, veranda out the front, and an old rocking chair.
And an old
Now, the reason why I had to yell out one more time is because Tim Simons, God bless him, who's in the control room sitting here listening to the program, said, we're running, you're actually running short. We're finishing a minute early. Make them go again. So I came back running back inside, went, one more time!
So they went. Music's been, it's been a tricky one for me. We played the Dirty Three one day and, oh, did I get abused for that?
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're great, but maybe not maybe in the Bush Telegraph audience. Yeah.
Yeah, I know that.
But,
now.
I mean, we always prided ourselves, didn't we, in trying to break open ears to new Australian music, some of it from the city, some from the country.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I mean, listening to country music with ears that were receptive to it, that was a big breakthrough for me because, you know, I wasn't a country music person. I looked down on country music, to be honest with you, because I was, you know, a classical type. But I actually came to appreciate what country music was and what it gave to people and really started to enjoy it because the context made sense. And that's what Bush Telly has brought to Radio National. It's changed the way in which people think about Australia, the way in which Radio National listeners think about Australia, because they don't have access to the Country Hour. This has been their access to Australia outside the cities.
Cities,
and
exactly.
I know you said we shouldn't be sad, but I am sad. You know, we're losing a wonderful, wonderful program. And, you know, what we've just heard over the last 45 minutes is just an incredibly proud contribution that has been made. And I have to say, Cam, you have been a wonderful presenter. It's
not quite as good as us, but I think you've been fantastic.
It's such a liability
Enough of this. I don't like where we're heading here. Let's talk about one of your memories, Michael, of a road trip in the Northern Territory back in 2010.
Yeah, well, this was one of those trips that Margot was talking about earlier. So Margot Foster and Carl Curtin, who at that stage was the regional presenter at Catherine. He worked in a tiny, like a little wardrobe in Catherine. So he gets a four-wheel drive. I wonder whether we still have four-wheel drives at the ABC. Anyway, we had one. It had the symbol on the outside. Mm. And we drove the length of the Stuart Highway. And we started in Darwin and we ended up with Alice Springs. And we broadcast at different spots throughout the week from Monday to Friday. And the most moving story I've ever done on radio happened during that trip. So we were barreling down the highway and Carl suddenly stopped and backed up. And he looked down a dirt track that went down to one side and he just turned onto the dirt. And I didn't know why he was doing this. And we, about 100 yards down, 100 metres down, we came to a group of people who were just having a cup of tea, sitting on boxes, and there were horses just grazing. And it turned out that this was the party of a girl called Keita Docking, who was a young Jillaroo who'd acquired a brain injury when she'd fallen from her horse. Mm. And she was now riding with her mother, Gladys, and a doctor and some other support people, and the horse that she'd fallen from. The horse that she'd fallen from because she wanted to sort of, you know,
literally get back on it.
Get back on the horse. And also, she didn't want the horse to feel bad about it. And they were riding for 500 metres around the sort of Daly Waters area to raise money for an organisation which helped people with disabilities. And I spoke to Keita, just sitting on a couple of boxes there while the horses grazed beside the track.
Keita, this is your horse over here just behind us. Tell us about the horse.
Brumby. Well, she's very quiet and what you'd call it, playful with you. Like, she eats a bag of chips when you have them. She'll snatch them off you. Yeah. Yeah.
And what's her name?
Brumby.
Oh, she's called Brumby. Oh, I see. And she's the horse that you had the accident on.
Yeah, she is. And she's still quiet. But I had to get a lady named Jeanette Wilson come up and re-educate me and my horse. Just brought me and Brumby back together as a loving couple.
as a loving couple. Mm. I mean, can you imagine what that was like? My heart was in my mouth as I sat there with my recorders talking to this girl. I thought, this is just such a privilege to be talking to this kid who's fighting this brain thing that had gone crazy in her head. And there she was just saying, I just want to love my horse. Mm. I was just in tears.
Such a sad but a beautiful story.
Oh, beautiful. It's just a wonderful moment.
This is Bush Telegraph, the last one ever on RN and Radio Australia. I'm Cameron Wilson, and with me the immediate past presenters of the program, Michael McKenzie and Michael Cathcart, who, of course, you're still here on RN. Michael Cathcart, we have this running joke about you and Burke and Wills. You and Belinda Tromp and Burke and Wills, you won't let it go. It was a long time ago.
Well, Belinda Tromp, who's a very long-serving producer here at Bush Telly and has been a wonderful asset to the program, just became obsessed with Burke and Wills, and it was the big anniversary of Burke and Wills, and she thought, now, Michael, you're a historian, you will be excited by Burke and Wills. And I wasn't quite as excited as Belinda was, but I went along with it, and she really opened it up for me. We spoke to some fantastic people who were celebrating the anniversary of Burke and Wills. In fact, I got so excited by Burke and Wills that I went away, after I left Bush Telly, I went away and wrote a book about Wills. Mm. That's how excited I got about it all.
Is Belinda doing Burke?
She could do Burke. That could be her next incarnation. She could stride across Australia as the female Burke.
Mm. Every tree in Belinda's garden has got the word dig inscribed on it.
So we've got some, I think we've got some of you speaking in the 150th anniversary of Burke and Wills.
Is that right? I don't know.
With Dr. Mitchell Rolls from the University of Tasmania.
Well, I'm not sure that's right. Mitchell Rolls was from the University of Tasmania, and he was an expert on the magazine Walkabout.
Oh, Walkabout, yes. Yeah, of course. Sorry,
which is what Burke and Wills did. I'm saving you.
Wills are almost going in.
Well, Walkabout is a kind of forerunner of Bush Telegraph. So Walkabout was a magazine that was founded in 1929, or the early 20s anyway, sometime in the 20s. And it opened up rural Australia to a 20th century audience. And it was published by the Australian National Travel Association. It was really encouraging people to go out and drive in rural Australia. And we've got a little bit of what Mitchell Rolls had to say here. If we look at the bulletin, which really defined the bush nationalism of the 1890s. It's full of stories of drovers and shearers and poetry about the bush. And it really is the cradle of bush nationalism. It does seem as though that bush nationalism sort of resurfaces in the 1930s, and that Walkabout is its new home. Do you see it that way?
To some extent, yes. I mean, there's no doubt that Walkabout did focus on the interior, and that rugged individual nationalism did come through in several of the articles, especially by contributors like Ian Edris and Arthur Upfield. But it was certainly more nuanced than that. It was inclusive of more detail, and in the hardship of the sort of rugged individual male, there are always scenes of beauty. Walkabout was forever finding beauty in inland Australia and the remote and northern regions. And so hardship was mostly leavened by descriptions of pure beauty. And I think that counters to some extent the nationalism that appeared in the bulletin.
So Dr. Mitchell Rolls from the University of Tasmania on the history of the magazine Walkabout. That's Bush Telegraph from back in January 2009. Michael Cathcart, can I just draw your inner academic out for a moment? How do you think, serious question
to end
on.
Sounds like a painful operation. Just go on.
This idea of regional Australia and what it is, how do you think it's transforming today compared to that stereotypical image?
Well, I think it's changing in the minds of urban Australians, because urban Australians, in a funny way, are losing touch with regional Australia, because we all used to know someone on the farm. You know, when I was growing, everybody had an uncle or a cousin or somebody who was on the farm. But as agribusinesses have become more dominant, I think that there are fewer and fewer urban Australians who really have the opportunity to go out on farm. On the other hand, the thing that has changed the way we experience Australia is the four-wheel drive.
Mm.
You know, it has opened up the country. So people are experiencing the country in new ways. And they're now looking at country in a way that they've never experienced it before, because urban Australia was always a bit frightened of the bush.
You know, it was a place both of national sentiment. You were proud to be an Australian. You liked the smell of the gum trees, as we heard in the song. But on the other hand, the bush was sort of menacing. It was full of melancholy and despair. And the four-wheel drive has enabled people to go, well, to the very shores of Lake Eyre and feel that they would be safe. So yeah. It's been an enormous transformation.
Can I add to that and say that I think that there's a generational disconnection, that you're right. We don't not have relatives anymore who necessarily live on the land. But at the same time, we're having to come to grips with the fact that the peri-urban spread from all our major cities is forcing people, confronting people with the idea that perhaps that plot of land used to be forest only a year ago. And there's some real issues that are springing up about the lack of understanding of landscape and how fire interacts with you when you're a new suburb on that landscape. So those areas have really raised some issues for people. And I remember one of the big series we did in the first couple of years of Bush Telly was a Lost series, where we talked to people who actually got lost in the bush, which is, gets back to that melancholy, yeah. And how they were changed by that. And we had some extraordinary accounts of people who were obviously mentally impacted by that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just before you wind up, can I just say that an extremely beautiful thing is happening here. We are looking out on the adjoining studio, the production studio, and the staff here at the ABC have gathered in en masse. They're crammed in, technicians and producers who've worked on this show, some of them for a long time, some for just perhaps a day or two here and there, are gathering, Cameron, as you get ready to sign off for the very last time from us here at
Yeah,
Bush
nice.
Telegraph.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning out. If you're interested in what we were just discussing there, you know, since you're the books and arts bloke, can I suggest Reading the Bush by Don Watson?
We might talk to
I've
him
heard
next
it's
year.
Great.
You did a great interview with him, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
it was
you.
A wonderful discussion.
Can still podcast it.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah. All right.
Simon, we asked you a question, actually. What have you been your highlights of your time on the radio?
Entire time.
Oh, on Bush Telly?
Well, the thing that I remember most was before I was presenter. Well, we were going to play a little bit of it today, but we won't. When I sent the story through to, I think, Michael McKenzie, you were presenting, of Skip Smith, the bloke in Dublin, Texas, who was a machine gun trader that would put on night vision goggles and get a machine gun to shoot his hogs that were eating his watermelons, which was just, you know, these moments you just can't believe what you're hearing.
Those are the moments that will stick. There's another one involving emus and artificial insemination, which we can't go into detail about right now.
Yeah, yeah. Look, and generally, actually, the thing that will stick. I'll remember the most has been the response in the last 4 weeks. You realise it's got nothing to do with me or you guys or anything else. This has been about a program that people have valued and means a lot to them. We've had a couple of people ring up crying in the last couple of days and send all sorts of beautiful letters and cards and emails, and that's really been appreciated by everyone. So anyway, good luck to you guys, the two Michaels, who are
and
a big part of Bush Telegraph. Look, we can't sign off without bringing in a bloke who's been such an important part of the team for this year. Been here for a year, but just had much bigger influence on the program than his tenure would suggest. Rowan Reid, who won't like me saying all this, has reluctantly come in. Rowan, you've had to deal with those phone calls over the last few days.
Yeah, we've had a lot of phone calls. We've had more than 1,000 emails, and heaven knows how many messages on Facebook and Twitter and what have you. It's been quite overwhelming. And yesterday, there were messages left on my voicemail of people crying because the program's going, which was, you know, sort of brings it back to some sort of reality and whatever our circumstances are, you really realise how important that program has been to some people.
Yeah, and that's what it's about, the fact that it has connected with people in that way, that it's become a really important part of some people's lives. Rowan, can you just say a few words about the production team? Because, you know, people hear my voice all the time, or the Michael's voices, whatever it's been, but, you know, the presenter's such a small part in this overall.
Oh, the presenter's important. Hugely important, but the producers have been fantastic. You know, when I came to this program, I don't think I realised the high quality and the high standards and the capacity of the people. People like Belle Tromp, who sadly this will be her last day at the ABC, worked here for 27 years. Kathy Pryor, previously at the Australian, but has been at the ABC for 10 years. Greg Muller, Monique,
Kieran,
lots of people. You know, they've done a lot of time and they've just put some great stuff for us.
And Kathy Pryor. Have you ever met someone who
and Verica
inflicts so much pain on themselves by trying to track down the most difficult stories possible? Yeah, we've got to say Verica Jokic as well, who's kept this thing afloat from time to time, hasn't she? And Rowan, I'll say it on behalf of everyone. Thank you so much for the work that you have put in this year, because it's been a real privilege. I've enjoyed this year. I'm glad we're going out the way we have. And most of all, thank you to everyone who has taken the time out to write in, to ring in, to listen.
And to help us create the stories, yeah, by telling their story.
Now, well, I'm going to go out. The final word goes to Dave from Corn. We hear something from Dave every day.
It's time. Dave from Corn. Great music. Enjoy the cosmos of the future, my friends. Still banging on to try to get his back, and I hope his will, whether it's you guys or someone else. But anyway, all the best. Keep smiling if you can, and enjoy the cosmos.